पश्यन्नात्मनि मायया बलिरो भूतन्यतानि त्रया यः साक्षात् कुरुते प्रबोधसमये स्वात्मानमेवाद्वयम् तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये ीजस्यान्तरिवाङ्कुरो जगदिदम् प्राङ्निर्विकल्पम् पुनः मायाकल्पितदेशकालकलना वैचित्र्यचित्रीकृतम् मायावीव विजृम्भयत्यपि महा योगीव यः स्वेच्छया तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये यस्यैव स्फुरणम् सदात्मकमसत्कल्पार्थकम् भासते साक्षात्तत्त्वमसीति वेदवचसा यो बोधयत्याश्रिताम् यत्साक्षात्करणाद्भवेन पुनरावृत्तिर्भवाम् भो निधौ तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये नानाक्षिद्रघटोदरस्थितमः दीपप्रभास्वरम् ज्ञानम् यस्य चुचक्षुराधिकरणद्वारा बहिःस्पन्दते जानामीति तमेव भान्तमनुभात्येतत्समस्तम् जगत् तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये देहम् प्राणमपीन्द्रियाण्यपि चला बुद्धिम् च शून्यम् विदुः श्रीबालाञ्जजतोपमास्वहमिति भ्रान्ताभृशम् वादिनः मायाशक्तिविलासकल्पितमः व्यामोहसंहारिणे तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये राहुलग्रस्तदिवाकरेन्दुसदृशो मायासमाच्छादनात् सन्मात्रकरणोपसंहरणतो यो भूत्सुषुप्तः पुमान् रागस्वासमिति प्रबोधसमये यः प्रत्यभिज्ञायते तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये भार्यादिष्वपि जाग्रदादिषु तथा सर्वास्वस्थास्वपि व्यावृत्ता स्वनुवर्तमानमहमित्यन्तः स्फुरन्तम् सदा स्वात्मानम् प्रकटीकरोति भजताम् यो मुद्रया भद्रया तस्मै श्रीगुरुमूर्तये नमहितम् श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये विश्वम् पश्यति कार्यकारणतया स्वस्वामि सम्बन्धतः शिष्याचार्यतया तथैव पितृपुत्राद्यात्मना भेदतः स्वप्ने जाग्रति वाय एष पुरुषो माया परिभ्रामितः Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namah Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Guram Vamsyana Lonilom Varamahanato Himamshu Pumam Itya Vati Chara Chara Makamidam Yasyaiva Murtyashtakam Nanya Kinchana Vityate Vimshatam Yasmat Parasmat Vibho Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namah Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
Quarters.
Sarvatma Tvamiti Sputi Kurtamidam Sarvatma Tvamiti Sputi Kurtamidam Yasmadamushminstave Tenasya Shravanata Dartamanana Dhyanacha Sharanata Dartamanana Dhyanacha Sankirtana Sankirtana Sarvatmatvamit Mahavibhuti Sahitam Sarvatmatvamahavibhuti Sahitam Syadishwaratvam Swataha Syadishwaratvam Swataha Siddhyetat punarashtada parinatam Siddhyetat punarashtada parinatam Chaishwaryam avyahatam
Cindy. Sarvatmatvam iti sputi kritam idam yasmat amushmin stave tena asya shravanat tad arta mananat dhyanat cha sankirtanat sarva atmatva mahavibhuti sahitam. So sarva atmatva mahavibhuti sahitam syat ishwaratvam swataha siddhyet tat punar ashtada parinatam cha aishwaryam avyahatam. So. Last verse is usually some sort of a praise and giving you blessings, saying you will attain this and attain this if you've studied this well. This is similar, a little bit different. Sarvatmatvam iti. Sarvatmatvam. State of being the self. The state of being the self of all. Sarva means all. Sarvatma, the self, the atma of all. Which is exactly the tattvamasi, you are that. The self that you are is the self in all beings. It's the very self of Ishvara. So sarvatmatvam iti sputi kritamidam. So this sarvatmatvam, idam means this. So this sarvatmatvam sputi kritam is made clear, spooky, is made very clear, made manifest, almost like the crystal is very clear, spatika. This crystal is called spatika, here's spooty. Is made very clear, spooty kritam. So this sarvatmatvam is made very clear. Because, yes, Mat, here's just because. Because mushmin stave, because in this, him, in this praise in the form of this Dakshinamurti Stotra. Right? So in this Dakshinamurti Stotra, because in this Dakshinamurti Stotra, the Sarvatmatvam is made very, very clear. Tena, because of that, Asya Shravanat. For this, from doing Shravana, remember Shravana, Shravanat, fifth case, Asya Shravanat. Because of that, from the Shravana of this, particular these 10 verses, from the Shravana means from experiencing the teaching that Guru Sisha, where the verses are actually being unfolded. So from the Shravana of this, Ted Artha Mananat, and from questioning and understanding it, understanding the Artha of it, of this Dakshinamurti, the Artha means the meaning, and from doing Manana on the meaning of this, Manana means that I'm actually logically understanding from all standpoints and from all, could it be this way, even why couldn't it be this way, why couldn't it be that way, what is the Upanishad really saying, but more with mananam, why is it this way, not another way. So, and from doing manana on this, meaning understanding it, not just the vision of the Shruti, but understanding it logically, why in fact it has to be this way, there's no alternative. It cannot be another way. Once you apply logic to what the vision of the Upanishads, and which is so beautifully condensed in these 10 verses, once you really start to use your reasoning in light of this vision, and then use your reasoning in light of other ways maybe it could be, you will only end up here, right? Because what is truth can withstand any amount of logic and any amount of experience. It can't be negated. If it's not true, it will be negated. Even if it takes a long time because you've never really thought about it or applied logic to it, once you do it, it will be negated. It's not possible, you know. But that's not true with this vision. The more logic you apply to it, the more you know that it's the truth. The more life you experience, the more you know that it's the truth. In fact, all your experience, all the logic of yourself and of others only makes it shine more brightly. So from doing manana on its meaning, artha means, artha has many meanings. One of the meanings is meaning. Okay. From doing the artha, from doing manana on the artha, on the meaning of these verses, and then dhyanacha, and from doing dhyanam, nididhyasana, contemplating on them, and sankirtanat. Sankirtanat means telling others, telling people about it, talking about it in satsang with each other, as guru bhais, you know, all people studying together in your sangha, you're all studying together, talking about it, discussing it, teaching it to each other, you know, which you probably find yourself doing. And remember, somebody asked, you know, do you have to teach it? No, you don't have to teach it, but just on a practical level, if you have this knowledge and somebody comes up and asks you, you know, to teach them, then you'll teach them. you'll do the best you can, and then you'll make arrangements for them to go and study further. They need to. Because how can you not, you know? If you yourself know, you know, you give as much as you can, and then you'll make sure that they can continue on. That's just how it is. Because if you have this knowledge, there's nothing more important for your whole life. And those are the things you pass on to others, right? So you'll find yourself passing it on in one form or another. Doesn't mean you have to be a big teacher devoted to teaching, unless that's your calling, right? Nevertheless, if somebody asks you, you'll find yourself teaching it. And the more that you teach, or the more that you can express this knowledge, the more it becomes embodied. Because otherwise, you know, how we're just taking in, taking in, taking in, taking in. You don't know how much you know. It's shocking how much you know, because it rests so lightly. until somebody asks you, and then all of this knowledge starts pouring out. And where did that all come from? I had no idea. Swamiji once said, this knowledge rests so lightly. You know, it's not like you're carrying this big weight of knowledge around. It rests so lightly. Because it is you. This knowledge is you. It rests on the creation itself. It rests on the reality itself, you know. And you're never away from that reality. So you never think that you have this storehouse or this ocean of knowledge inside until it needs to somebody, some mumukshu, some students are there wanting to receive it. And then the huge storehouse of knowledge that's inside of you, backed by the, Swamiji says, the huge ocean of knowledge, Amishwara, all connected, you know, everything is connected, comes rushing out. So from all of these things, from shravana, from manana, from dhyanam, nididhyasana, contemplation, sankirtana, telling it to others, and what? From doing all of that. Sarvat, sarvatmatvam, that sarvatvatva, sarvatmatva, mahabhuti sahitam. First compound. Sahitam means along with or together with. The greatest vibhuti of all. Vibhuti is glory. Vibhuti is glory. Like for instance, a vibhuti, what are the vibhutis in some of the chapters of the Gita, I think, again, chapter 3 and especially chapter 4. Bhagavan is just extolling all of his vibhutis. You know, and Himalayas would be one of the vibhutis for among the mountains. The greatest vibhuti is the Himalayas. The vibhutis among the rivers, Ganga. And so he just looks around, you know, and all of the things in the creation that stand out, even among the jivas, the greatest pianist, that's my vibhuti. The greatest anyone, the most exalted of anything, Bhagavan will say, that's my vibhuti. These are all my vibhutis. You know, so, what is the greatest vibhuti, the maha vibhuti, is that sarvatmatvam. That being that I am is the being of all beings. This being that I am is the being of all beings, sarvatmatvam. So, sarvatmatvam, which is the greatest vibhuti, so together with the sarvatmatvam, which is the greatest vibhuti that there is, syat, Ishwaratam, Ishwaratvam, Swataha. What is siddhyate? What is accomplished? What is accomplished? What would be there's also this, what we call Ishwaratvam, overlordship. And he's also in this verse, I'll just translate this verse and then talk about it and put it into perspective. There's the Ishwaratvam, the being Ishwara, along with the greatest vibhuti, being the Atma, the Adhishtana. Ishwara is mitya. So not only am I Ishwara, I am the Sarvatma. I am the Adhishtana, and I am the Namarupa. The Adhishtana and Namarupa. So in fact, there's no thing that I am not. I am the whole. So, Sarvatma Mahavibhuti Sahitam Syat Ishwaratvam Swataha Siddhyet tat punar ashtada parinatam cha aishwaryam avyahatam. And being Ishwara and being the Atma of all, what is accomplished naturally by that, so siddhyet swataha, naturally without any effort on my own, is this ashtada aishwaryam. Aishwaryam are all the glories of Ishwara. All of the glories of Ishwara become mine. And so this is the Ashtada Aishwaryam. Sometimes this is interpreted, taken as, and for the most part taken as the Aishwaryam, as the Ashtada, the Eightfold Siddhis. So the Eightfold Siddhis within Hinduism, different groups have different sets of Siddhis. But these are like the almost yogic capacities that can come naturally your way. not that you may not want them, but nevertheless, they say that they can come your way. So I'll give you an example of what these siddhis are. One is called anima. Anima means that you can become the size of an anu. You can become so small, because actually, in fact, the being, the atma, in the slight is the atma of the smallest entity there is. I am still the self of that being. But through siddhi, I can become so small. And through siddhi as a capacity, mahima, I can become huge, like the size of the largest thing that there is. I can become, it's called lagima. I can become as light as the lightest thing that there is, as light as a feather, you know. Or I can become as heavy, guruma. I think it's called guruvima or something like that. I can become as heavy as the heaviest. These are four of them. Then there's another one that's called praptaha. I can go anywhere at any time. So anyway, I think it's called something like prakashyam or prakashyam. Something means, the meaning is I can, anything that I want, I can have. And that I can go anywhere at any time means I can go to places that people can't go to. Even if I want to go to Patala, to one of the hell worlds, if I want to go there and see what that's like, I can go there. I can just go there by my vritti, you know. If I want to have something, I can have it. Just by my sankalpa, I can have that. If I want to have dominion over other people, vashita, something, I can have that. So these are considered siddhis that yogis work for. In fact, in yoga and in the Vedanta, in the spiritual traditions, they say that we don't want to work for these things, because they're a distraction. You don't need these things, your Ishwara. You don't need to and should not work for these things. It's just absolutely a distraction. And so they're told not to go toward these things, not to do all of the extreme tapas that is required, all of the prayers, all of the mantras, all of the austerities that you have to do to gain these siddhis. These eightfold siddhis, there's so much you have to do. It's kind of like if you want to go to Swarga Loka, there's so much you have to do. Very hard, very difficult to get there. It takes a tremendous amount of work. So, and Swami will joke, just stay here and get this knowledge. Somebody say, I have a soul story. This person came to him, said, Swamiji, I want to gain this knowledge, but I want to gain it from Brahmaji in Swarga Loka. So Swamiji said, it's very difficult, sir. Very difficult. It will take you a long, long time. And whether you're successful or not, you know, we can't know. Because there's so many things involved in that. So much punya involved. So many rituals, so many austerities, so much upasana, you know, so much smoke. As you're doing all of these yajnas. Just stay here. The knowledge is the same. You're going to do all of that work to get to Swarga Loka, to get the knowledge that you can have here right now. Don't do that, you know. If the reason you're going is so that you can get it from Brahmaji, you get the knowledge here right now, then you can go and talk to Brahmaji. But might as well get the knowledge here rather than putting it off, you know, because the knowledge is exactly the same. So I think what's said here is because of this word swataha, that whatever siddhis are there that are natural to the human being, whatever capacities are there that are natural to all of us, those become available to us naturally without any work, whatever those siddhis are. You know, they're talking about the Ashtada siddhis, means don't work for those things. You know, those siddhis are something that come to you naturally if they're necessary for you in this life. Don't spend your time doing all of the sadhanas, devoting yourself to sadhanas for that intent. There's no mumukshutvam in that. There's no jnana nishtha in that. You spend all of your time working for these siddhis thinking that somehow that will make you full. So now what he says, you've spent your time wisely. You've spent your time wisely because now you're gaining self-knowledge, which is the maha vibhuti. The maha, that sarvatmatvam, being the self of all, that is the greatest vibhuti that there is. Whether you can become big or small or heavy or light or astral travel here or there, these are very small things. They're small things that take a tremendous amount of work. They are not going to be any vibhuti compared to being Ishwara himself. What's the comparison? I become big and I become small. I become light and I become heavy. I gain dominion over all of you. I can make all of you do what I want you to do. If I want to, I can travel up to the stars, or I can go through all of the hell worlds. If I want to have an ice cream, I can wish it and it will be brought to me. So that is who I am. And I have worked very, very hard for these capacities. Don't you wish you were me? Very silly. Very, very silly. That's what I was reading, what Niditatmama Tetravidananda said in his book on this. He said, don't ask for these silly things. What do they compare? And what is natural to Bhagavan? What is natural to your upadhi? You know, whatever vibhutis are there in this upadhi that you have, all of those will be available to you. The vibhutis of being a human being whose heart is not constricted, whose psyche is not constricted. We're not constricted by our complexes. We're not constricted anymore by the tensions in our body and in our nadis and in our chakras and all of this. Those are no longer constricted because all of those things, as you live in your knowledge, are released. They're naturally released because as you don't, your psyche is no longer asking, let me have this so that I can be happy. Let it be this way so that I can be happy. Because to whatever little degree that you ask that, there is fear. Because if I say, I need this, and if I seriously say, I need this so that I can be happy, then there's fear that I won't get it. And then if I need it in order to be happy, there'll be fear, this bhaya, that I will lose it. And so I live a life of constriction, where I'm not fully myself. I don't have all my faculties available to me because all of them are working at half-mast in a way. Half the energy. Because half the energy is being eaten up by my fear, you know, and my protectiveness and my worry. And I've noticed over the years as all of us, including me, we're all kind of unfolding and things are dropping off. Another way of saying it is our vairagya, our dispassion is increasing. It just goes on increasing. By dispassion, dispassion is very simple. It's not this, sometimes dispassion is like, I don't want that, I don't want that, I don't want that. See, I don't want that. That's not dispassion. It's that I don't need that to be happy. It's not about not having something at all. It's about it's not required on a very deep level for my happiness, for my fullness. That's what we mean by vairagya. And in fact, vairagya is knowledge. Self-knowledge is vairagya. Shankara said that in one, I forget the name of this beautiful little text that he wrote, and at the end he says, jnanam is vairagya. Because if you think about it, vairagya means really all is well with me. I don't require anything to be whole. I have that sarvatmatvam. I know, in fact, that I already have everything. And the ananda that I seek, I am. So there's nothing in all the vibhutis in the creation, they're nothing but myself. Right? All of the other things in the creation are myself also. You know? There's nothing that's not me. And so there's nothing I need to become full. When that's the case, you are relaxed. You know, so Anjuna said, you know, they asked, how do you get any rest, Swamiji? Because Swamiji gets up at 4 in the morning, 4:30, somebody, just imagine this. Somebody would come and serve him tea 4:30. When he was younger, not the last couple of years, then it was like 6. For many years, someone would bring his tea. Maybe we couldn't wait to be the one who got to bring in his tea. So he'd bring in his tea at 4:30, knock on the door, you know, and we'd bring the tea in, and he'd sit up, you know, kind of straighten up his dhoti and everything, and sit up, and we'd serve him his tea and some little crackers, you know. And then he'd say, "What?" I mean, you know, what? Tell me, what? And then we'd have been storing up all this stuff. Then he would listen. He'd listen so intently, you know, and then say whatever he had to say. And we'd have 20 minutes, half an hour, you know. And then we didn't have anything really meaningful to say. We'd just kind of sit there quietly. But usually we had something, you know, some question, something we wanted to know. So he'd talk to us. Then now at 5 o'clock, then he would get into the shower. Take a shower and then come down to meditation. We used to have around 6, take meditation in the morning, and then he would have his then he would go to his breakfast. But before the meditation and the breakfast, there would be like 15-20 minutes where we would be having satsang or meeting with people, right? And then he would have his breakfast, and then he would be meeting with people or doing some business. Some of the people, staff, would bring business, and then he would have class. Then we would have the class, you know, and then he would be meeting with people, meeting people, meeting people, meeting people. Then he would have lunch. And then he would have his lunch, and there would be many people there for lunch, eating with him, you know. We'd just all crowd into his kitchen. many students, and people would crowd in and be eating with him. And then he would sit out. And then there were people who needed to meet with him. So he'd be meeting with people. And then he would be hoping to get a little bit of rest. He would go up to his room by the time he was finished with meeting with people. It'd probably be like 2:30. And then he would rest until about 4. And then somebody else would bring him his tea, meeting with him, you know. Then he would spend some little time to study his text. Then he would go down and teach the class. He'd be meeting with people. After that, he would have dinner. Everybody would be crowded around having dinner with him. Then he would go down for satsang, right? And then he'd come back, and sometimes he would be meeting with people, at 11:30, 12 at night. You know? So somebody asked him, "Swamiji, when do you rest?" Because you know? No one can even imagine keeping that schedule. He kept that schedule for years and years and years. That was his schedule, and his heart was so big, he couldn't say no, because the people came from all over to meet with him, and his students had really important questions, and so he just would meet as long as he possibly could, year after year after year after year after year. You know? So he asked, "When do you rest, Swamiji?" He said, "I rest between my thoughts." Because on another level, you know, it's so true what he says, Atma never gets tired, doesn't get worn out, you know. It has no limbs. You have no limbs, you have no parts, right? You're not active within time and space. Your being is ever puranaha, means ever new, ever fresh. There is no tiredness in the self. You know, and so as your body relaxes more and more and more, really the energy of your own being, that tejas of your own being, you know, is much more available to you, because your body, the energy of the body, is used for the body's functioning rather than holding and caring for our hurts and our traumas and our needs and our fears. These are things naturally just drop off over time. They drop off over time. There are so many of them, and it is so subtle that some of the things that you drop off, you never even realize that that was something that would drop off. That's how subtle they are. Even even certain types of attachment to your own, mind, you know, to the way your mind is, or the way that you're responding to this and that. All of these things you stop clinging to. Doesn't mean that Dharma is not primary, but Dharma, so this is another thing to understand, Dharma is natural. Dharma is your natural behavior. Dharma is Ishwara's behavior. How Ishwara is. And Ishwara doesn't have to, is not working. The universe is not working. It simply is what it is. And the laws, it is a manifestation of the laws of Dharma. Dharma rules everything, you know. Dharma is what supports everything. Dharma, just in terms of the laws, the physical laws, but also the mental laws, the emotional laws, all of the values that we are brought up with in all of the different religions of the world, we're brought up with those values because those values are Dharma. And when I stay within the Dharma, everything works. And when I go against the Dharma, nothing works. Everything falls apart, you know. And so these values, I love thy neighbor, the golden rule, all of these things, don't commit adultery, even the Ten Commandments. Those are Dharmas. They're all put in a negative way because that's more Western. Put it in a negative way. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. He said, why shouldn't you do it? Well, if you do it, you're going to be punished. No. If you do it, the psyche punishes you. Your own psyche punishes you. You know, and so that's why Swamiji's book, Value of Values, is such a wonderful book to be cherished. Because that's exactly what it does. It gives you a value for the values. Oh, that's why that should never be done. That's why I should never lie. That's why I should not hurt another person. All of these type of things. That's why I should not misrepresent myself, or the amanik twam, adambi twam. I shouldn't misrepresent myself or brag about all of my vibhutis and all of this. And what happens when you do that? To really kind of understand the negative backlash it has on your own shanti, you know? That's what that book, Value of Values, is. And so here, as I become, gain nishta, gain clarity, you know, to my knowledge, where I am that knowledge. That's really the nishta, you know? I am that. And nothing can move me from that. That is me. That is my knowledge. What my knowledge is who I am. That's really the jnana nishta. But when that's true, then certain qualities like envy and jealousy and these kind of qualities that cause so much pain, those drop off because I see you as you're all my vibhutis. You're my vibhutis, you know. That's how Bhagavan sees it. You're all my vibhutis. You can, whatever I can't do, you are there to do. You know? Whatever I can do, I can do. What you can do, you can do. And as a whole, we can do everything. And we see that in the whole creation. When there's a need, there's somebody there that can do it. You can see everyone and everybody's glory is your glory. The glory of Ishwara. And so then you're free, your heart is free to appreciate, to just simply appreciate. And in that freedom, there comes a deep relaxation. One time when I was going to the gym, I was doing some working out, I had a trainer trying to get some healthy or whatever. And this it was a woman trainer, and she told me something that I've never forgotten. This probably was 20 years ago. I've never ever forgotten. She said, when you're working out, or you're using these machines, or you're lifting weights, or whatever it is you're doing, you have to let your muscles relax, you know. And I always thought the opposite. Like, I should really work, you know. I should work these muscles. So I was doing just the opposite, making them all really nice and tense and working them really hard. The opposite of what you need to do. You let the body, in a relaxed way, with the muscles relaxed, not tense, you let those muscles work, you know. And somehow I realized that much more, that I just thought that was almost a metaphor for how we need to be really healthy. We need to be relaxed. We do what we do, and we do it well, but there is no reason the stress or the worry or the tension that we can get ourselves into doesn't help us. It doesn't make us do the work any better. It doesn't make us learn any better. In fact, in a relaxed way, I should do all of these things. And nothing relaxes you more deeply than jnanam, because it totally frees you. You know, it totally frees you from these worries. And as it frees you, then your natural abilities of the mind start to blossom. Your intuition blossoms. Your intuition is something that is a gift. It's something that everyone has. You all have wonderful intuition, you know. You even have all of the time little warnings, little premonitions. But often, including myself, you have those things, but you don't listen to them, you know. You don't trust them, you don't listen to them. But there comes a time when you do trust them and you do listen to them more. So that all happens naturally. It's not like they haven't always, these little siddhis, we call them siddhis, we are calling things that have always been with us as siddhis when we recognize them. But when you recognize them, you also recognize, I've never not had these intuitions. I've never not had these little premonitions. It's just that I've never listened to them, you know. I've never taken them seriously. But when you're relaxed and you're not judging one way or the other, then those things are present for you. Not in any type of a woo-woo. It's not in any type of a big deal. Only in the very most natural way. And also there's all these ideas about mind reading and all that. You're mind reading all the time. You know, you have a sense, you feel what another person is feeling. You feel what another person is thinking. You know, you don't pay attention to it often. But you know what they're thinking and you know what they're feeling. Because it's just an obvious thing. You know, but you don't trust it. You know, and that doesn't make you a mind reader. You know, you're not a feeling reader any more than all beings are. That's what I'm saying. It's all beings are. It's just that you don't pay attention, you know. So these things that we can talk about, Pooja Swamiji having all of these siddhis, he would never think of himself as having siddhis. He'd just go. He doesn't like all that, you know. At the same time, he knows what you're thinking. He knows what's... It'll come to him if you're one of his students, you know. What's going on with you will come to him, and he'll know. It just comes to him, and he knows. But this happens to all of us. You just don't pay attention. But the thing is, as you get more relaxed, you pay attention, because there's less to pay attention to. You know, because your mind's not all tense and worried and worried about this and what's going to happen to me and what's going to happen next, and spending all of your time, you know, most of us spend most of our time either catastrophizing over what can go wrong in the future, or if what I need to get to be a happy person I'm actually going to get, if this is actually going to work out, and what's going to happen if it doesn't work out, and these obstacles are there. I can spend a huge amount of time in that la-la land with all the emotions that come with it. And then I can also be spending time regretting about the tragedies in my life, you know. And there have been tragedies in my life for all of us. There's been tragedies. There have been betrayals. There have been all kinds of things. It's all kinds of ways that we've been hurt, you know. And so because of those tragedies, big tragedies, and ways that I've been hurt, or the ways I've been terribly betrayed, I'm carrying a lot of pain inside of me And my mind will keep going back to and revolving around these tragic occurrences. And I'm not kidding when I say tragic. Things that have really hurt me, or betrayals that have really, really hurt me. We all have our little pot of those, you know. And so the mind will continually spend a lot of energy going back there, you know, worrying about that, hurting over that, something that happened to you 40 years ago, you know, really suffering over this betrayal that took place 40 years ago, carrying that up to the present. So a lot of our huge amount of our energy is spent in this imaginal space created by our memories, and the imaginal space created by our projections into the future. And minimal time is spent here in the present. Less time is spent here with the present, with us together here, than is spent in these imaginal worlds. And so what about when this mind's preoccupation with the past and the future falls off? Because I have my ananda, you know. I have let those things go on a deep level because of the work I've done. Right? We've all done this work. When I say I, am speaking for all of us. Because of the work we've done, because of doing the inner child work, because of all of the dialogue we do with the ones that we hold grudges or have fear, that all of the work that we've done, resolving all of those things into my own being, you know, releasing that pain from every angle that presents itself to us, we do that work, always bringing my buddhi back to myself, so that my buddhi is free of that. My buddhi, my body is free of that. And then, you know, I have more energy than I need. My body has more relaxation. It's a relaxed body, you know. And so the capacities of the natural capacities of my mind and the natural capacities of my body are available to me. You just think about it, how much you already have let go and how much there is still to let go. Yeah? And imagine having it not there, where you're not worrying over the future and you've forgiven and let go and understood the past. It's okay, let it go. To the point that your mind isn't circling that anymore, circling those past tragedies. And it's not projecting what's going to happen to me. Am I going to have a happy life? Is this going to work out? Is this going to work out? What about when your mind doesn't do that anymore? That's amazing to think of, right? Because then your mind is just here. It's just present and doing here naturally. For a while, that's a big sadhana. It's just, okay, come on, come home. Okay, come home, you know. Let's come back. Let's just be here. You know, and then doing the work about really sitting with those things, sitting with those projections, sitting with the worries or the pains of the past, you know, until they're released. And then my mind, then what happens when I do that? After that's been done, you know, I spend my years of sadhana doing all of that. It's not that I spend a few months doing it. I do it over several years of growth. You know, but then what happens is that I'm just present. I'm present as Ishwara's upadhi. This is Ishwara's upadhi, right? The jivatvam is not very much there. The only reason it's there at all is because the body is still alive. This body will be alive and the mind will be alive for the jnani until the prarabdha runs out. But who is really here is Ishwara. That's where the Mahatma is in the Mundaka Upanishad. The devotees will always seek out the Mahatma, their guru. Everyone in India has their guru. You'll seek out the Mahatma for the Mahatma's blessing, for the Jnani's blessing. Please, can I? They'll stand in line. You know, Swamiji, at his, in Manjikuti, his little town where he grew up, they've kind of built a little place there for him. So he comes, and they've kind of preserved his house. His house was right next to a temple, and they built him a place to stay when he comes there. When he comes there, the whole town lines up way around the block, as long as you can see, because they all want to see Swamiji. And they want to see the Mahatma and ask Swamiji, you know, my son is in trouble. Swamiji, will he be okay? Swamiji, can you give your blessings so that he will be okay, you know? And Swamiji will just be quiet for a minute and he'd say, be fine, don't worry. He will be fine. And the next one will come. Swamiji, you know, I don't know if my child is going to have enough money to go to school. Can Swamiji help? Don't worry, we'll help you. Don't worry, you go. We'll help you. And that's why all these children, he's put so many children from school. Yes, don't worry, we'll help you. You go. And then this Sakshat Kirtananda, somebody standing on the side, or Sheila, okay, this person, we have to put the son through school. So this goes on endlessly. You know, if then it could also be my husband is sick. He's very sick, Swamiji. He's very, very sick. Can Swamiji, can he live, Swamiji? And Swamiji, don't worry, he'll be all right. So one time I asked Swamiji, having experienced this over many years, of Swamiji doing this, you know, and giving so much, but also, and they would tell about some tragedies, what will happen? I said, Swamiji, how do you pray when they ask you that? What do you do, you know, to be able to say it'll be all right? And when he says it's all right, it's all right. That's the thing. They have complete shraddha, and he says with confidence, your son will be okay, don't worry. No, your husband will be fine. Swamiji, what if when you're there and they ask you, you know that that person is not going to be all right? Is actually going to die, you know. They're not going to be cured. What does Swamiji do then? Because then he's not able to say he'll be all right. So Swamiji just said, he thought about it for a minute, and he said, let's see. Let's pray for it. Let's see. I'll pray for it. Let's see. And that's exactly what he does. Then he'll pray for it and see if there's any way that can be changed. You know, but that's how it works. So in the Mundaka Upanishad, it says you always go to the Mahatma because their will, their sankalpa that arises for them is Ishwara, because they don't have any other agenda. And so if what comes is, yes, you'll be all right, they take that vritti that has come as being Bhagawan, because there's no personal agenda there. And so when we say Bhagawan, this whole creation, is Dharma is Ishwara, the vrittis that come in through the mind are also Ishwara. These vrittis and the content is Ishwara, unless they're contaminated, and I use contaminated, by the Jiva Srishti. Right? By the, what we call pratibhasika, means by the subjective desires and needs of the jiva, then the vrittis that come are also, have my own likes and dislikes, my own needs, all of this type of stuff, you know, projected out also. So those are the jiva srishti. We have Ishwara srishti, Ishwara's creation. We have Jiva Srishti, Jiva's creation, right? The Jiva's creation is super, or all the pratibhasika, all of the subjective experiences, my raga, dvesha, my desires, all of these kind of things that actually have nothing to do with me, with my prarabdha, you know? And not that much to do with Ishwara either. They're just superimposed upon Bhagawan. They're all Bhagawan because that's part of the creation, that there is Jiva Ishwara Srishti and Jiva Srishti, it exists. But the Jiva Srishti has its origins in Ajnanam. in the Jivatvam, the Jiva Srishti, the Srishti means creation, the Jiva's creations, you know, their projections and all of that, has its origins in the Jiva. The body, mind, sense organs, the basic person, Swamiji calls that basic person, the body, mind, sense organs, the prarabdha karma, you know, that's the basic person, that's all Ishvara. But then this body, mind, sense organs has the capacity to think, to create, to imagine, to have free will, to have raga dvesha. Those are all originating out of the jiva, and mostly out of ajnanam, especially the raga dvesha. That's why for a jnani, when these raga dveshas are more or less dropped off, you know, then if you have a desire, that's just the prarabdha. Because you don't have any such idea that this will make me happy and I need this in order to be full, so let me do that. No, the desires arise out of the very prarabdha to take you through your life. So there's more, that you take those desires more seriously. It doesn't matter one way or the other, but the desire is not really something coming from Jiva Srishti, it's coming from Ishvara Srishti. And so are the vrittis. If I'm not imagining on whether this child will be all right, well, what would be a nice imagination for me to have? There's no imagination taking place. There's just a blessing. And what is the form of the blessing? Is it, let's pray, you know? What is the vritti that comes? He'll be fine. He feels it very clearly, he'll be fine. So I asked him, how do you pray then? How do you know that? How do you do it? And I just sit with myself and I see what comes. I'm going to visualize it. Right? And I visualize it. Like if they say my child is sick, you know, then I visualize that child. And I visualize that child as well, as being well. And then I said, that's when I asked, what if that doesn't come? That visualization, you know, what if it doesn't come? I'll pray for it. It means I'll try to bring that forward. I'll pray for it, you know? So these are all the vibhutis that are not vibhutis. They're the vibhutis of Ishvara. They're the vibhutis that you all have as jivas. But our mind is very cluttered with raga dvesha, you know? With our likes and dislikes and our worries and our fears, all of these things that are cluttering our mind drop off in the light of our knowledge. But they drop off slowly, you know? They drop off slowly over time. That's where the most important thing for you, those of you who are mumukshus and who want this freedom, shravana, manana, nididhyasana, satsang, you know, being a sangha, staying with the company of the good. What they mean by the being with the company of the good, what they mean by that is that you want to be your friends and the people that you spend time with. You admire their values. The values that they live by are the values you want to have, as opposed to staying or hanging out with people whose values you don't want to have. You know, so that's satsang. You keep that company of the good, you do shravana, manana, nididhyasana, you have satsang, you teach or discuss among yourselves, and keep yourself surrounded by this vision until you are the vision, right? And then the students surround you. Until then, you keep yourself surrounded, you know, and you just always be, you always live in this vision until it's a non-question. One example they use for that is, say, which we're doing now at the farm, you plant a little tree, or now we're planting these little tomato bushes, you know, we want lots of fresh tomatoes, so we're planting these, and then we put these supports around them, so that the vines can have something to grow on. And then we put deer fencing around that, you know, so that they'll be protected until they grow up. You know? The same, we are giving some beautiful new fruit trees, and so we plant them and put all the right kind of fertilizer and everything in there and plant them so beautiful and make sure they get lots of water every day, and we have a protective fencing around them so the bears and deer won't come and pull them down until they become big and strong. And then, in fact, they'll outgrow the fencing, you know, and they'll be our protector. But until that time, they need to be watered and cared for and protected. And we have to do that for ourselves, you know. Your psyche, your body, your psyche, your environment, you have to protect it, like protecting, watering the little flower, and make sure it gets plenty of sun and water and love and care and everything that it needs so that it can grow and flourish, you know, and become who you really are. Who you really are is the Ishvara Upadhi, part of Ishvara's Upadhi. It's not cluttered with all the Jiva Srishti. Let the Jiva Srishti just falls off. And then you are just, you are Ishvara. Even in terms of your Upadhi, you are Ishvara uncluttered by a lot of Jiva Srishti, you know, by all the projections. Those are all gone. Then you are just Ishvara. He is part of Ishvara, who has no... is not pushing Ishvara away in any way. You're not pushing Bhagavan away. You love being Bhagavan. Means that as a part to the whole, I just love my relationship with Ishvara as a part to the whole. That's what's the most important. You know? That here I'm in this situation. What is there to be done here? What's my task here? But what's Bhagavan's task here? That's what I love to do, because there's always, you know, a hidden motive. Why do I love to do it? It's because that is ananda. There is nothing blocking my ananda. Dharma does not block the ananda that the mind enjoys. You are always ananda, and that is always present. But yourself is always present, no matter what type of vrittis, what type of thoughts you're having. But sometimes the thoughts are very painful and hurtful. And then even though I am ananda, and that's not hidden from me, still my mind is in pain, or my body is in pain. Right? That I am ananda, and that the pain can resolve into me is a great blessing. But it's also a great blessing, as time goes on, how this knowledge purifies me from all the raga dveshas and all of the complexes, the pain of the complexes that I'm carrying, so that I can just, the body and mind can just relax. And so that's the Mahavibhuti, recognizing that I am the self of all beings. But the other, that Aishwaryam, that he's talking about is these eightfold siddhis, but you can look at that, I think, in a more real way, is that these siddhis, whatever siddhis that are natural to the human being, whatever capacities are natural to the human being, those become naturally yours as you shed off, you know, all of these raga dveshas that keep that jivatvam kind of impacted. It keeps you kind of impacted, even though all of it belongs to Ishvara. When you get rid of all of those things, drop off, then you just are Ishvara. Even in terms of the upadhi is Ishvara. All of the upadhis are Ishvara. All of the thoughts are Ishvara. Right? And I am Ishvara. That's what it is for Jnani. I am Ishvara. That's the knowledge. I am Ishvara. The Atma is Ishvara. This body, mind, sense organs is Ishvara. What isn't Ishvara? There is no me. You can say there is no me. There is only me. You can say there is only me. And there is only Ishvara. That's the siddhi. That's the mahasiddhi. You know, and all of the vibhutis that naturally unfold of you out of that, that Aishwaryam, that these siddhis of what it means to be Ishvara, all those siddhis become yours. Not in this magical thinking, but just in a way that's normal. Swamiji is the most normal person. He's so normal. So you become yourself without any this avyahatam, without any obstruction. Swataha, just naturally. You naturally become the upadhi that you are, with all of its capacities, natural capacities. Just mature into that without any obstructions. So you can think of that as the siddhis, not these small little things. You can kind of become a big giant or a little tiny pramana. Om Tat Sat. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.